Good morning, good day, and good evening. Welcome to episode 206. Five? One of those. Five. I want to say five of Check of Tea. I am, as always, your host, Brody Robertson. And today, we have the CEO and one of the founders of System 76, Carl Rochelle, on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. This is one of those episodes where I'm like, you know, this would be a cool thing to do at some point, but, you know, I'm never going to get the attention of someone running like a computer company in this space. Like, it's not going to happen. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I just happen to watch the show sometimes.
I told you when you reached out, I really enjoy your podcast. I think it's great. I try to catch as many as I can, really. They're entertaining and fun. I like how you start almost always not sure which episode number it is.
I have the folder open. I could check it. It is five. Okay, it is 205.
Well, it's great. Great content. And thanks for covering Linux and all the fun stuff people in open source are doing. It's great.
Thank you. I guess we should probably just get straight into like everything you're doing, because there's a lot of stuff I do want to cover. And, you know, there's only so much time in the day. So I guess the first place I want to start, because I know some people don't know this, the origin of the name System 76. Because I know where the 76 came from, but I know a lot of people don't, and it's always amusing when they find out.
Right. So the 76 is a reference to the American Revolution. So intent and our purpose and what we've been working on for 18 years is independence for proprietary software. So that's where the 76 comes from.
How long's the company been around for at this point?
Just over 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah, by tech terms, we're ancients.
Well, especially for, what would you describe the company? Is like a system integrator? Sort of, like, what term would you use for it? I know there's a bunch of different terms people use for PC companies.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of a good question, because we, and the traditional term is OEM, original equipment manufacturer. So we design, these days we do a lot that's unique amongst our industry. Like we design a lot of hardware in-house. We built a factory in Denver. We do a lot of manufacturing. We've been bringing more and more of the things that we, instead of like a lot of companies where design and manufacturing is outsourced, we've been bringing more and more of that in-house. Mm-hmm. But we also develop an operating system. Mm-hmm. And so...
And you also have keyboard as well that you sell?
Right. We design, manufacture, launch keyboard. Interesting story with that. So with the factory, what we want to do is open source. I mean, our ultimate goal is to open source the computer entirely. Mm-hmm. And it's just takes a massive amount of endurance and a lot of time, and it involves a lot of things, and we have to like knock off pieces over time. But so that means, whether it's the hardware design, PCB design, eventually RISC-V is really exciting to us, because it's at some point I would love to be building RISC-V computers that can compete with the latest Intel and ARM stuff coming out. So we've been chopping all of slowly chopping those pieces off year after year. Mm-hmm. The launch keyboards was the next step before getting into laptops. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we did launch was because we wanted to learn precision engine milling in our factory.
Right.
And actually, the form factor is actually pretty similar to a lot of things that you see in a laptop. We also wanted to learn get more experience with electrical design for high-speed traces. So it's one of the reasons it has a high-speed USB hub built into it. So and of course, the PCB for launch is all open source. And so we wanted to learn and experience, get some experience doing those things before we move over to laptop design, which is another project that's kind of humming in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did see the picture, I think you posted it, of the milled out case from a couple of months ago. I guess it's like half a year ago now, of the Virgo case, or the panel, whatever it was. I am really interested to see what ends up happening with that, because I did see, like, I did see when, I think Jeremy posted about the design specs for it being open under what license was it?
I think we're going to use, probably this Open CERN license, the reciprocal version.
Okay. And I'm, you know, we saw what Framework did a couple of years ago with their, you know, with their devices. And we're seeing a couple of fairly small companies moving that direction. And obviously, you know, we're not seeing like HP or any of these like massive providers yet. But if you create this small groundswell, this creates a market for it. And if there's a market for it, then, you know, if users actually really want to support this, then they have a place they can go. They have companies they can support. If they want to start using these designs themselves, they have the tech know-how to do so. They can go and do something really cool with them themselves.
Right. It's the hardware equivalent to open source software. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder.
Yes.
In many ways, because it takes capital or machinery and other things to actually realize these physical products. Mm-hmm. But with 3D printing, it's becoming much more interesting. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is, in the same way we want to do with open source software, we enable people to create things with what we build. Mm-hmm. We're really interested in what people can make with the stuff we make. We want to do that with a laptop platform in the long term, whereby you would have a board and an extra and modules, and you can use these different components to mix and match them and create your own products. Because at the core, a lot of these things are very similar, and the differences come in with how things are laid out, manufacturing quality, the component decisions, a lot of other decisions that every individual person can innovate and work on, create their own customer experience. But all the guts are really very similar. Mm-hmm. And we think it's something that can be done. Intel's been quite interested in doing something similar to this for some time. A lot of companies want to do it. It's done in desktops already. It's just we need to miniaturize all that and get down to the point where people I'd like people to be able to take components off the shelf and hack together their own laptop. I think that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very long project. I think it's going to take us a couple of years to really get there and to nail it. But once we do, I hope we've built something that people can use as a platform to not only be how we make laptops, but how other people can experiment and build and grow and see what they can make of it as well.
Well, it sounds like the future is really exciting, but let's go all the way back to the past. When the company first started, what was the landscape like back then? And what was the first system that you guys started shipping?
All right. Well, I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
Well, what was the first device? What was the first device class you had? I assume a desktop.
Yeah. I've got some antidotes that I think can help draw a picture of what that those early days were like. So I started System 76 in a basement with $1,600.
Okay.
that's all I had. And Intel had a program. Intel was very worried about their customer base kind of becoming two or three really large customers and then not having any, ability to innovate or do things, on their own because they'd just be, encumbered by what these four or five customers might want. Mm-hmm. They were used to, at that time, still the desktop market where there was a huge enthusiast market that was, building PCs and a pretty healthy system integrator market. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to try to reproduce the same thing with laptops.
Right.
So they had a program called the White Book program.
Okay.
And so you could, they partnered with ODMs, the original design manufacturers, to make a few different designs where companies like ours and a few others could go and pick out a few models and make your own OEM product out of it. Mm-hmm. So it's really System 76, and especially the laptop, our ability to deliver laptops, was just lucky timing. Mm-hmm. If it hadn't happened to be 2005 and Intel didn't happen to have this program or didn't do any kind of white book program, there is a very decent chance that we would have been making desktops and then never been able to grow to the point where we continue delivering broader and broader laptop or product lines. But we're fortunately it was good timing, and so we had the ability to buy products that we could ensure worked really well on with Linux. And the first products, because we only had $1,600, mm-hmm. the first products I put on the website. When the first one was ordered, I had it overnighted to me, and in 4 days did all the engineering to get the hotkeys working, to get everything on that product work, because I had never seen it before, because mm-hmm. I didn't have the money for that. And so got everything working, boxed up, shipped off to the customer, and from what I recall, they loved the product. I remember our first return even.
Oh.
Because it broke my heart. So at that part, I guess I didn't have as thick a skin. 18 years old,
get yep.
thicker skin. But that first return just broke my heart because he didn't like the products. Oh, there's another story. Okay. It's all flooding back now. The first laptop we ever sold happened to be someone in Colorado, and I hand delivered it to their house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and I said, here's the laptop. And they didn't even say a word. They just said, thanks. And took it. And it wasn't like, thanks for bringing hand delivering it. Mm-hmm. They just grabbed it and closed the door, and I moved on. But
has the website you've I was going to say, is the website you've always had system76.com? Because I've got archive.org open. I can go back and check it.
It is. Yes.
Okay. Sweet. Let's see how far back we can go.
There should be a statue with a cone on its head. That'll be on the homepage, I believe.
Oh, wow. It's archived all the way back. Incredible. Okay. First archive, yeah. November 27th, 2005. Let's look at that one. Let's see what it is. So, Ubuntu was what... Yeah, okay. I see it. Ubuntu was what you guys originally offered. Right. Why was it Ubuntu that was decided upon? Because that would have been really shortly after... 2004 was the start of Ubuntu? Yeah, 2004.
Right.
That was really shortly after.
I think Breezy Badger was the first Ubuntu release we shipped with.
Is that
5.04? And before that was just Warty Warhawk or something.
Okay, like that. Yep.
Yeah.
Very early.
So it was, it was very early. And the first time, so when we were deciding which distribution to go with, mm-hmm. I tried Red Hat. I've already been using Linux for quite some time. Mm-hmm. But, spent more time with Red Hat, SUSE. I really like this little distro called Yoper. I thought it was awesome. And their claim to fame or the thing that they did was recompile everything for 64-bit. So it was faster but of course, they broke other things. But it was kind of cool. And tried Ubuntu. I tried Ubuntu because they had these really racy wallpapers or something like that. And I thought, okay, well, I got to try that. And so,
I know exactly what you're talking about. I will find them. Keep going.
So I loaded up Ubuntu, and at that time, sudo wasn't really a thing. It wasn't how we ran root commands. You would usually su to root and then do whatever you're doing and then exit. Mm-hmm. I tried su to root and it didn't work. And I said, oh, screw this. It was a waste of time. And I threw it in the trash. Mm-hmm. So I went back to Red Hat and SUSE and the other distributions that were out there. Played with Gentoo for probably a month. Mm-hmm. It takes a month to play with Gentoo. And then I decided to come back around to Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. The difference this time was that there's this great handbook I found. It was the Ubuntu, it was like a community handbook.
Okay.
And if you went through it step by step, you just, by the end of it, understood how Ubuntu worked.
Right.
And like the decisions behind it, a lot of things that were, you know, different than I was used to with other distributions. And it clicked at that moment. And I thought, well, there's really feels like there's something here. And so let's go with Ubuntu.
That makes sense. But then eventually you guys moved off of Ubuntu. And that was around the, was that after the Unity? When was that related to Unity? Because I know that's part of the story.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is. It happened to be that, so the week that Canonical announced they would no longer develop Unity, they had, their sales team was in our office downtown. And so I was sitting across the couch from the Canonical sales team when they announced that Unity wasn't going to continue any longer. And it was just, it was a shock to us. I was really excited about Unity 8 and the prospects there. And I think there's kind of this Cassandra effect that would happen with Canonical and Ubuntu sometimes, to my mind at least, where they had this, they had the right, they had a lot of the right ideas, but they were just always like too early to realize them. And a lot of the things I think about we're doing today with gestures on phones, they were way ahead on that with Unity 8. I think the work that they did in UX was really impressive, drove Linux ahead considerably. But ultimately, I can also understand it wasn't where their revenue was, wasn't where the real business was, wasn't where they were serving customers. And so it also, after the shock, made sense. And but it also meant an opportunity for us because the desktop is everything to us. It's what we think about every day, it matters for our business and for our customers and us personally. And so that while it was sad to see that go, it also seemed like an opportunity for us to kind of express the things that we wanted to do in Linux desktop that that we couldn't really get done through Ubuntu either.
Your camera just died. Oh, there it is. Okay. Oh, what happened there? that was weird. So Unity was a weird situation for Ubuntu, because I know when they swapped, a lot of people didn't like it. Then when they swapped off of it, a lot of people didn't like they swapped off of it. They got used to it. So what was, like, when they did swap to Unity, what was that like going from, this GNOME thing that was established at that point to this whole new thing they had just developed? Like, were you guys worried what the experience would be like? How did that really go?
Oh, I think we had, whether right or wrong, we had a lot of faith in the Ubuntu team. And we thought they were being careful with what they were developing. And maybe perhaps it came out early. I remember Mark Shuttleworth going through bug reports from people and, reading what the responses were and taking that all in. I think there was a lot of care effort to listen to what, the feedback that happened with what was a pretty dramatic change for people. And change for users can be hard. We went through it when we developed the Cosmic UX, and we wanted to deliver that to our customers because we had faith in the testing and the user testing, the UX work, and the things that we had done, and we broke things for people that they were used to. But over time, the overwhelming response was positive, and I think it was the same for Unity. That over time, the response was more positive by far than it was negative. And the negative things are, in some ways, UX changes. In other ways, perhaps not having the right feature sets available early on. But in the end, like you said, switching away from Unity was just as just disruptive for a lot of folks as moving to in the first place.
Yeah, I can't speak specifically for Canonical, but the way it looks to me from the outside is they really overstretched. Like, they wanted to get into TVs, they wanted to get into phones, they wanted to get into all of these things. Like, they had, like, a phone, Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Like, it seemed like they were just trying to, like, do too much at once, and then they had to pull back to what they knew worked, and that ended up also meaning we had to move away from what Unity was and then move back to GNOME. And I'm sure at that point, if you were a Unity user or if you're in that position, just the whole situation, just it was confusing and it was unclear, like, what was really going to happen. Like, is GNOME going to be in a good state now? Is it going to be like it was before? Like, what's really, really going on here?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think maybe the prime motivation was right to make responsive UX in a desktop experience. That was absolutely right. To us, it's completely critical that we do that because ours is because of tiling. So all of our apps need to be responsive, but that also means that our platform will work on lots of different form factors. Mm-hmm. But the difference between maybe our approach today and the approach that Canonical had taken was that Canonical's target was the mobile phone first.
Yeah.
And that wasn't where the users were to start off the platform. And we're going totally to the desktop, which is where all our users are. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see where it goes from there rather than the other way around. In other words, we're not depending on mobile to be successful for the project to be successful.
Right.
Just need to build a better experience for our customers today. Mm-hmm.
So what year did PopOS start?
2017.
Okay. So I guess just what was that discussion like, saying that you guys wanted to run your own distro? Obviously, it was based on Ubuntu, so you weren't doing your entirely own thing. It's not like you were running, you know, full-on package repos for everything, but it's still a massive burden to take on maintaining a distro. And because now, before, like, you could send people who had software issues to Canonical, and obviously I'm sure you guys were still helping people with things before that, but now it's not Canonical's responsibility for anything to be working. Now, to the user, it doesn't matter that under the hood it's still very much got a lot of those core Ubuntu features. Now it's your thing. So what was that like?
It doesn't actually quite work that way.
Okay.
When you ship a laptop to someone, you own that experience.
That's fair.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's Ubuntu, and our customer wouldn't even expect to go to Canonical for help.
Okay.
They call us for help, whether it's software or... And a lot of the experience is really how well the operating system is adapted to work with the hardware. Mm-hmm. So by that time, we were already rolling our own kernels, a lot of times MESA, a lot of large parts of the stack, because we wanted to be a zero-day hardware manufacturer for Linux. Mm-hmm. Meaning that when Intel has brand new chips, when NVIDIA does, when AMD or whomever, mm-hmm. That you can get that brand new, you know, Meteor Lake, which is, you know, around the corner, Meteor Lake laptop with Linux on it. And you don't have to wait 6 months for Linux to catch up. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of that happens upstream with Intel and AMD, but getting it packaged and getting a good experience in the distro, that was our responsibility. Mm-hmm. So we had, we were already doing a lot of it. The, what was added on, especially for the first release, is our thinking of, okay, well, now let's take this operating system and let's make it match the aesthetic of System 76. So when customer experience starts with an ad that has, you know, the coloring, the brand feel of System 76, and then that takes you to the website that has the same feel, and then you get the product that has, the same character and characteristics, and then you start it, and now it looks similar. I think that is a really high quality experience that we wanted to start to deliver. Mm-hmm. And the first release was about doing that. Let's set our aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we started chopping off the pieces that we knew our customers needed or were requesting. Mm-hmm. Like full disk encryption was a huge one that we couldn't do as an OEM. Because if you do full disk encryption and load the image and ship it, that means you have the key and that's not
right.
That's not secure. So we needed to write a new installer to make that possible. If we're writing a new installer, how about we have a restore partition? Because when our customer has a problem, they call tech support, we can fix it in 5 minutes for them. Mm-hmm. Without, you know, losing files and apps, things like that. So then after that, we started adding our own value based on the experiences that we have with our customers. And I really just kind of making things smoother and easier for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, one of the nice things I do like about PopOS is you have that tiling. And I know there's a lot of people who don't like tiling, or like they've never tried it. I will keep saying until the end of time that tiling is just a better way to use a computer, and the only reason you don't like it is because you haven't tried it.
Okay. We survey our customers a lot.
Okay.
I have a lot of feelings about this. About 40% of all POP users use tiling.
Wow.
And they report using it all the time. It's very high, but that means 60% use floating. So we're developing Cosmic. Everyone in System 76, all of our engineers.
Yeah, of course, the engineers.
All use tiling.
Yeah, of course they do.
We're working on releasing a new desktop environment where we know 60% of people are going to use in floating. And so I've been using floating Windows for 5 or 6 weeks to tighten up that part of it. And I just, I said in our Mattermost channel that I can't believe people still use computers this way because tiling is so superior.
Do you guys have...
But yeah, I agree with you.
With your floating Windows, do you have like window snapping if you like go to the edge or something?
In Cosmic, we do, yes.
Okay, yeah. Without that, I don't know how anyone uses floating. Like if you go to like a macOS system, it's like actually is a hotkey on macOS to do it. But if you just have, you have to like resize Windows to the exact size. I don't get it. I really don't.
I tried. I installed Windows on a laptop a couple nights ago. I just wanted to see how it's looking, what they're doing. I can't believe the size of their interfaces. Everything's enormous. But the tiling is really interesting. It's it feels very to me. It feels very heavy because you have to have. It's almost like you have to have forethought and to put things where you want them to be. Whereas with auto tiling, dynamic tiling, however you like to put it, things pretty much end up where you want them, and it's really easy to move them afterwards rather than thinking about it first and then placing things. I think it's something that we're really passionate about. Making it easy for more people to get into tiling. That's one of the reasons it's an opt-in thing in POP, so you can just turn it on and start playing with it. Mm-hmm. I think we're going much further with Cosmic, where the mouse tiling experience is going to be really, really slick. And so for those people that are used to floating, they can tile, but use the mouse and move things around and organize in a way where you don't need to learn all those shortcuts to do it. I think it's a sticky feature that once you get used to it, you just can't get you don't go back to floating Windows.
Yeah,
it just doesn't work that way, I don't think. So
I have use cases for floating Windows. Like when I'm doing these, I have a browser window open that I can show you in my capture as well. I put the browser window over my face because I don't want to look at my own camera. I have things like that, or if I want to open up quick notes or something, I don't want to disrupt the rest of my layout. Having a strong floating feature there as well, I think, is really important. A lot of tiling window managers, they have floating there sort of as an afterthought. It doesn't really... You don't have, window snapping, for example, in a lot of tiling window managers, and that's... And, like, other little... Just these little niceties that can make the experience good if it's a floating first environment. But, yeah, I like that they're both being there, because you do have a lot of people that use both, and it is majority floating, so you need to make sure both are important, but I'm sure the engineers would love to make the tiling stuff more of a focus if they could.
Yeah. We're building into our tiling applet.
Mm-hmm.
So GNOME has extensions, right?
And, yes.
I don't know, do you... I know you love Hyperlend, right?
I'm running Hyperlend right now. I do have a bit of an issue that I'm dealing with the dev on a really bad crash when I stream sometimes. But besides that, Hyperlend's great.
Well, do you use, I haven't used Hyperlane yet. I've just watched videos. Okay. Do you use like a Polybar or Waybar or something like that along
I
with
use
it?
Waybar.
Waybar, okay. So, I mean, you'll be familiar with these things then. Like, there's a, like each item on the bar is a separate application. And
sure.
You can arrange them however you'd like and put them in different positions, put the bar in different positions. Well, that's what you can do in Cosmic. Mm-hmm. The difference is you do it in a settings app where you can add or remove and move things around. One of those, we call them applets because we didn't want it to feel like extensions. Like this is a different kind of thing. And then we, so our tiling applet, what's new in with upcoming Cosmic is you can do tiling per workspace.
Okay.
So, and workspaces can be per monitor. So that means if you want tiling over here and you have a separate monitor where you want it to be floating and it's its own workplace, workspace, then you just have floating windows over there and you have your tiling over here. And now you get that, you know, that mix of environments that is best for your workflow.
Yeah, Austin WM does the same thing. I love that feature exists. I really wish that more tiling window managers just copied it. And I'm happy that you guys are. Because, as I said, this goes back to what I was saying, where a lot of tiling window managers have tiling and have floating. But if you want to do floating, you got to like manually float every window. And that's just annoying. So being able to dedicate a floating, this is my floating workspace, and I'm sure you can set as many of them as you want to that, and if you just don't want tiling at all, you can just turn everything to be floating. That, I think, is the best way to do it, absolutely. Now, I'm sure some people have asked, we'll get to more on Cosmic in a bit, but I'm sure some people have asked, why even bother with the effort of doing Pop OS? I know you said you were already like customizing stuff in the first place, but why go like all the way to have your own branding for it, this own, like, make it its own thing that people can install. Like, why even bother with that? Like, what's the point of that?
Well, as a company that makes Linux computers and is very passionate about the experience our customers have, I think it was absolutely necessary to especially with Canonical pulling back from the desktop for a while, while they refocused their business efforts, this was the thing that we live and die in, is how well the Linux desktop is doing, how well it's advancing. And in 2017, I think the Linux distro environment and desktop and DE environment and compositors, I think it's far more dynamic and far healthier today than it was in 2017. Our choices were pretty thin then. And there, of course, you know, great distros like Fedora and SUSE. But to take our tens of thousands of customers and say, okay, well, now here's Fedora.
Right.
It would be extremely jarring. And most of our customers are businesses as well. So they're depending on the not just the hardware that we're providing, but the software as a platform that they use to build things with. We couldn't do that to our customers.
Right.
And so those two things together were our motivation, why I think it's really important for us to take that step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at the... I'd never actually properly read the page for Pop OS, and I just noticed that, obviously, like, you've got your, like, the feature list here, like, workflow customization, auto-tiling, but then you get down to development tools, and it's very much, like, businessy focused stuff. It's like, hey, you can do deep learning, you can do engineering, and, like, I guess that makes a lot of sense then. So I don't know if you can say, like, specifics, but how much of your like sale base is businesses and then individuals? Like what's that split sort of like?
It's about 70%, 65-70% business, and then 30-35% consumer.
Wow. Okay. That is a massive split. I didn't realize it was that much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a lot of, you know, it's kind of the way I think about it is, if, what we don't do is really big deployments inside of a company. Okay. But all those engineering departments inside companies, mm-hmm. they really like using Linux and having it, and they like they need to have a hardware provider they can depend on for both support, someone they can call when there's a problem, someone that has engineers that's working on a kernel regression because you're our customer, mm-hmm. and so while we don't sell 10,000 computers to the energy company, we might sell a few hundred to the engineering department. That's where we operate.
So when I had Jeremy on, he was very excited to talk about the engineering aspects of Cosmic. You know, he is very much a fan of Rust, as you can tell from his Rust operating system that he started during the Rust beta. but from the business perspective, why did you guys want to do a whole desktop environment? Like, what was GNOME not offering, or was it the direction that GNOME's going? Was it just wanting the stability of having something yourself? Why go for Cosmic? Why do this?
Well, there's two main reasons. First, when we develop our Cosmic UX, which mm-hmm. is essentially what our extensions on top of GNOME, mm-hmm. Pop Shell and other extensions that we used to put together the UX, the launcher, the dock, it's the application library, it's auto tiling, all those together that's the user experience that we wanted to develop for our customers. That in our research and our user testing was a better experience for our customers, and the response to it was overwhelmingly positive, especially the launcher and auto tiling. They were once you get used to using them regularly, it's similar to other things. It's hard to, like, Alt Tab is terrible to try to get to an app, but if you can just type the name mm-hmm. and then switch to it, it is a lot faster and a lot easier, and so the response to the UX work that we did in GNOME was positive. GNOME wasn't very interested in the direction we were taking. They have their own design ideas, and mm-hmm. that's of course perfectly fine. A project should go after its philosophy, its design ethos.
Sure.
Ours was different, and so we had a choice of between every six months adapting GNOME to our UX, mm-hmm. which means all of our engineering cycles are used just making the same thing and maybe adding some features here or there. But that's a lot of engineering time and cycles just adapting something that can break out of underneath us and isn't particularly sound for what we're trying to do anyway. Mm-hmm. Or we could go build a desktop environment. Mm-hmm. It seemed like very, very stark differences, because one is relatively small and one is absolutely massive. But if we wanted to continue adding value as mm-hmm. much as we possibly can to the user experience, add value to the ecosystem mm-hmm. of open source, it wasn't going to be adapting GNOME every 6 months. Mm-hmm. It was going to be going out and building Cosmic. Mm-hmm. The second reason that we decided we wanted to build Cosmic is because we thought it'd be really interesting to build a Linux desktop environment platform that people can use to build customer experiences with.
Okay.
So Cosmic will be the flagship experience on Pop! OS. Mm-hmm. But it is designed and architected so that people can take Cosmic and create their own user experience. Mm-hmm. So if you, in our testing with our users, we like really powerful little applets that can do lots of different things. We like the launcher, we like the tiling features and the app library and a dock. maybe your users don't need that at all. Maybe Manjaro's users need something completely different. And a quick list menu would be better. So you can just remove our applets, put your own applet in, change our app library however you'd like to change it, change the orientation of the dock, change what opens when you hit the super key. You could do all of this and all of the groundwork that makes that really hard to do in a lot of desktop environments is already done for you. It's mostly changing configuration files to set it up the way you'd like, and maybe writing a couple of applets so the user experience is a little different for your users.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had talked about a little bit earlier, I think the ecosystem in open source is really, really healthy and creative and quite incredible. And so the idea with the second reason Cosmic is to enable that ecosystem to do really creative things and just take it and do what's right for their users or experiment with it and see what kind of user experiences they might build, whether it's a distribution or it could be a different device. It could be a tablet. It could be an exercise bike for a company that's developing something. This gives the world a platform to take, and it's architected to adapt to the experience that you want to build.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that's really curious about Cosmic is most Linux desktops are GNOME, GTK, or Qt. You guys are going a whole different direction. It's all Rust-based. You're using the Iced toolkit. You're using this Smithy library to build the compositor. How did these discussions go? Was it the engineers who were like, hey, let's... I'm sure people like Jeremy were a big part of this, who obviously... I can see the Rust influence there, so... How did those discussions go? Were there any concerns about going in this direction of realistically, like, a fairly untested toolkits in the general Linux desktop space? I just want to know what happened there. Like, how did...
It's not for lack of trying everything else first.
Mm.
So, we look very closely at GTK, and the compositor was an important, because as with our experience with hardware, developing a compositor was very important to us. The compositor has a huge impact on the experience for a in a desktop or in an operating system, and so that was a early indication that this is going to be a bigger project was that if we want to really do what we want to do, mm-hmm. we're going to have to write a compositor. We considered GTK, but what we really wanted to do was build a pure Rust platform. Like you say, a lot of the UI and just the GUI ecosystem around Rust, especially, it's been almost 2 years. Since we've been developing this, especially 2 years ago, was very, very early. Didn't even exist.
You guys are basically the driving force behind the GUI Rust stuff.
Right. But that's also been awesome because we've been like an early entrant to this growing ecosystem of Rust development, Rust GUI development. We've been able to contribute key parts to it that are used across what is now this growing ecosystem. Text rendering is, I think, the standard is just Cosmic Text because that's what we wrote. It works really well, and so now that's what people use. And I think that's really cool to be a part of. There's obviously they've made the project a lot larger. We had to build Cosmic Toolkit. We had to build all of our own widgets. We had to work on accessibility. Fortunately, it's a great project. It's an access kit that was pretty well along that we could integrate into ICE. I think there's a great community building the GUI ecosystem for Rust, and it's just a fun part to be on.
Mm-hmm. How many people do you have working on Cosmic?
Seven.
Okay. So it's not really that many people, realistically.
You'd be amazed with, I don't know how big the first Android team is, but I don't think it was much bigger than that.
Okay, that's fair.
15,
that's
20 fair. Or something. And I think Android took two, three years, something like that too. Bigger projects, for sure, mm-hmm. but might have been 20 people, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's sometimes surprising what a small group can really accomplish with a lot of people that are kind of insane.
I know that there was the blog post that came out recently saying that the alpha probably is going to happen in a couple of months. I don't say dates because people will hold you to it. I've told people this before. I told the budgie developer this. Stop saying when things are going to happen because it's not going to happen then. But is the project on track is what I want to ask.
I disagree a little bit.
Okay.
I think you need to have a date mm-hmm. to help your focus.
I think it's important to have dates internally. You just don't need to tell people yeah. those dates.
Well, if you don't tell people externally, then it's a lot easier to break.
That's fair. That's fair.
So in short, yes, I feel like we're on target. We're going to be very close to finishing all alpha features at the end of this month.
Okay.
That means we have 2 months of polish and bug fixes, mm-hmm. which I think for a project this size is a nice amount of time to get there. Of course, we're going to need rebase under 2404 and do some distro work and installer work, things like that as well. There might be a 2 to 4 week window on either side, probably on the latter side. Mm-hmm. That's more realistic. But I think it's a good target for us. It's by the end of March, early April-ish.
So is the plan to have the alpha with the next version of PopOS? Is that how it's going to go?
That's the alpha will be the next. Well, the alpha of Cosmic will come along with the alpha of PopOS. Yes.
Okay. That's exciting. That's really exciting. Because yeah. I've been following this project for quite a bit at this point, and. You know, early on, it was like, you know, a lot of mock-ups and, you know, cool ideas there. But to see it actually coming together and being something that's, you know, actually... I know there's been people trying out some pre-alpha stuff, and it's been in a relatively good state. Obviously, I've said this to the KDE guys as well. You can do however long of an alpha that you want, but the second that you give it to the general public... That's when you're going to realize there is a lot of cases that you didn't test. There's some weird hardware configurations. People have got some weird input devices that you just never considered. Or there's just like use cases and interactions that just didn't come up during that early testing. And I wish you guys the best, but I guarantee there's going to be some rough edges there that were just never spotted.
Absolutely. Especially with something of this size. Mm. So at the end of January, we're going to open up. It's basically, you know, myself and the engineering and design team. We're all using Cosmic. Mm-hmm. Some folks in tech support, but the business folks at System 76 start getting added at the end of January. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be our first internal dog fooding of what we built. Where we're going to find a simple example is a lot of people use Alt Spacebar. To open the context menu in a window. We don't have that right now. I'm absolutely certain that that's going to show up in a bug report. And there'll be hundreds of little things like that.
Yeah.
So I think it is timing for when you actually put something in the public, I think to your point, is really sensitive. It's what I want for us to be effective with an alpha, it needs to be, For two reasons. One, to be effective with the alpha, but two, because this is the first experience with Cosmic, we don't have trust from previous releases.
Right.
We don't have folks that can say, well, you know, this is the first time anybody will experience this. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be better than what you'd expect an alpha to be.
Yeah.
So it needs to have all the right features so you can use it daily. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be really polished, but it's okay that we don't have, you can adjust the sound with the applet. We don't need the sound panel and settings. Mm-hmm. We don't need some of those things. So it should be a really polished product with a list of very clear things that we know aren't done. So we don't get bug reports on all the things that we know aren't done. They'll still come in. But that's my hope, to kind of handle the fire hose when the alpha time comes.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully that goes well. Hopefully. I know, obviously, it being on Wayland as well, there's going to be those Wayland-specific issues. And, you know, like, the whole... all of this stuff related to portals and video capture and just... It's going to be interesting. I'm excited for where we are right now with the Linux desktop, because KDE is going to be out with their new version very soon. You guys are going to have your alpha out very soon. Things are getting a lot better in this space. A lot better than they have, like, they've really ever been. I think, especially for Wayland, the past 2 or 3 years have been the best time in the project. Wayland's been around for 15 years at this point, or probably 16 at this point. But realistically, I think the past 2 or 3 is where the most work has been done. The most dealing with the issues that actual users have, not just these fundamental windowing issues. The other, you know, I've talked plenty about the multi-window stuff, the discussion that's going on with that. I've talked plenty about video capture, which only... video capture only worked 3 years ago, thanks to Georgios Savrakis. Like, that's a fairly new thing. And we're getting there, and I'm happy to that Cosmic is going to be another desktop with, like, a massive user base that can be part of this discussion, that can hopefully provide a different context for some of these problems, or just act as another voice to getting some of these problems dealt with that, you know, maybe... I've said before that certain desktops can be a bit of a challenge dealing with in the Wayland space, so I'm happy to have Cosmic there as, like, another member to help get these things done.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's I'm excited as well. Wayland's protocols are really getting there. They're getting close. Ian and Victoria and our team spend a lot of time in Wayland and working and helping contribute to the conversation. And I think they're all, for the most part, it gets hot, but, you know, it's but that's all right. We're all passionate about what we're doing, and we're making progress. My concern is NVIDIA.
Yep, that's and very concerning.
This the 550 driver is supposed to be the holy grail that just solves all our problems in
545. Do you mean
550?
545 is the latest one. Is 550 a thing as well now?
550 is what's coming.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yep, okay, yep.
Yeah, it's what's coming, and there's an OEM beta version now, and... And it's supposed to solve, all our problems, but... to me, this is the biggest risk in the project, because we can't ship without great NVIDIA support.
Yeah.
It's like 50% of our products ship with NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. So we just can't. It has to be great. So that, to me, that's the biggest risk. I'm really hopeful that the 550 driver really lives up to the hype and solves a lot of these problems. Because if so, then GNOME, KDE, Cosmic, we're all... we're all in for a much better year if that's the case. All of us users on Linux that are using NVIDIA, that will make a big difference if it's real.
I guess one last thing I want to touch on is your desktop stuff. You've got these... you guys actually make cases for your system. Like, these aren't just, like, cases that are just out there. So what is even the process of, like, getting a case like this made? And you also sell cases separately now as well.
Yeah. All right. So there's there's actually a nice video on, I think it's on the Thaleo page or this manufacturing page. I think one of the another reason that we're building Cosmic is because we're just addicted to making things, I think. I think that's a healthy thing. Some people think it's bad for you, but it's what we love. And the same goes for hardware. So the Thaleo desktop comes in as a flat piece of metal. Mm-hmm. It goes on top of a laser that clamps it and then drags it across the laser and punches and lasers features out of the metal. It goes through a sander and then a brake that bends it and puts it into shape. And it goes into a powder room where everything's painted. And then there's folks that assemble everything together. QC processes along the way. And then there's a pre-assembly where fans and things that are common across all of them are installed. And then there's the next step where the customer's order has come in and they have specifics about the drive and CPU and so forth. And then that all gets assembled and it's boxed and shipped to the customer. So it's a flat piece of shiny aluminum that at the end of the day is a desktop we ship out of the door 50 feet from the one that it came in at.
Mm-hmm. I'm watching the video right now. I don't know how many times you've watched the video because you basically got like piece for piece as the video was going.
Well, I built the factory.
Well, yeah, no, I'm sure. But, like, you just got every step of the video, like basically really as the image appeared on the screen.
Myself and John and a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
There were about four of us. Mm-hmm. That built the whole damn thing, and we never built the factory before. And so, it was an absolutely incredible life experience to build that. And now it has an amazing team that runs it. It makes it much better than what we. Like I said, we never did it before, and we were terrible. There were things that we did that were stupid, and they were terrible. But they got us there, and they got us shipping product, and now it has a real professional team, and they're continuously improving the product that we're delivering and the way that we're delivering it, it's a pretty cool thing.
I know people had asked for the cases to be sold separately for a long, long time. I found posts going back, like basically since you started the desktop, because they are really nice cases. What were the challenges in actually selling a case by itself? Because I'm sure that has different, like, manufacturing level, like a order volume, maybe? I'm not sure how I would say it. Also, they're slightly different cases as well.
They're actually the exact same.
Well, they don't have the wood panel on the front. The wood.
Yeah, just a different accent. So that accent is exchangeable.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. So it's really the same product. But our motivation one was just to enable people to use the things that we're making, this open hardware, and make their own things with it. Whether it's the SATA backplane, we have an I/O board that's that controls the fan curves inside the system. That's how we keep them quieter than. We have more information than the motherboard does about what's happening in the thermally. And so by taking that off, we can make better fan curves, better performance. But anyway, it just enables people to use this stuff to make things with. With the case, it made Thaleo far better when we built a case that was general purpose.
Right.
Because instead of only thinking about the things that we put in it, we have to think about what anyone might put in it.
How do you fit a 4090 in a computer case?
We never on our ATX size case, none of the motherboards in our 4 years of manufacturing Thaleo needed the top slot cut out ever.
Okay.
Because the position of the PCI slot was one below. Well, other older motherboards do have a higher PCI slot. That we didn't catch that until too late, and then we had to fix it. but ultimately, what that means is because we are servicing customers that are using it as a case, all of our customers that are getting it at Thaleo are getting a better product.
Sweet, yeah. I know you said you had to go around this time, but there's one last question. Unless you're still good for time.
I can go maybe another 15, 20 minutes.
Okay. Sweet. Well, I was going to ask you, I'm sure that you've got your pick of hardware. Like, you could probably use anything you wanted from the lineup. But what do you personally run yourself?
Right now, I'm on a Thaleo.
Okay.
I really like the small form factor desktops. And I'm not. I don't game much on my desktop. I'm a couch gamer. And so, Jeremy hates me for that, but. But it's just the truth. I work all day on a computer and I just want to be away when it's gaming time.
Yeah, that's so understandable.
So that's where I'm at on that. So I don't need a 4080 for 99X.
Sure.
And for a laptop, I use a Darter. Mm-hmm. I use either a Lemur or a Darter. The Lemur is, that's our ultra portable 14-inch. So it's really thin and light. It's nice traveling. Mm-hmm. But I'm also finding I kind of like a little bit bigger display. And so, you know, an interesting fact from the PC industry, a lot of folks think that like smaller laptops are most popular. Mm-hmm. Actually, 15-inch is the most popular size by far.
I've used a 13-inch display and my eyesight's pretty good, but like 13-inch is a little rough. I feel like I need to use Zoom on a lot of things, and you don't, you know, 1080p, you don't really have that much screen real estate to start zooming everything.
Right. Yeah, I have kind of moved more to 15-inch when I used to always like the smaller laptops. I also really care about open firmware, and so that's another reason I use the Darter. I also remap my keys because I want control where the caps lock is. I like super next to my space bar. I like to remap my keys. You can do that on our open firmware laptops and on launch. So, and I like my launch to match as close as I can to my laptop. So that's why I use the Darter.
That's fair. You mentioned the control caps lock thing. Look, I don't know why caps lock key exists. We don't need it. Get rid of it. Delete it. Remove it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I agree. I used to put function there actually, but then I changed it to control, which kind of changed my life because control C V J K L and all of those things that I use a lot. It's just I'm on the same row. It's great. So the other thing with Cosmic and our UX, the super key next to the space bar is really big. The reason for that. Mm-hmm. Is that instead of like contorting your fingers anywhere to get to it, you move your thumb over a little bit and you use your thumb to hit the super key. And that changed my life when I learned that one because I use my thumb to launch applications. It's your strongest digit and it's much better than kind of contorting fingers to get to control or super or other things. So that's why we put super next to the space bar on the launch keyboard.
I'm just trying it out now. Yeah, I've got my alt is next to my spacebar, but if those were swapped, that actually would make a lot more sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and you probably don't use alt much, and so you end up not using your thumb.
I have two key macros, but I don't use alt separately. Okay. It'll be like super and alt. So if they're swapped, it would not affect me at all. I just press them both anyway.
Right. So yeah, mine is super and then function is next to that.
Right.
Because I use the second layer. And
my keyboard doesn't have a function. This is
you have the alt.
Actually, no, the function's on the other side. Yeah, it's on the other side of the space bar. I don't know what the deal is. This is a Logitech keyboard. This guy.
Oh right, yeah.
It's got a volume wheel on it. I really like it. I can just go woo, and volume just changes up. Very convenient. I can't buy a keyboard without having that now.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, our volume controls are under the function row. It's function page up, page down to get to those.
Logitech really likes adding like free-scrolling wheels to everything, though. So like they have a bunch of mice with free-scrolling wheels. They have this keyboard free-scrolling wheels. It's sort of their thing at this point. I like it. It's nice. I kind of wish more keyboards had them, but I don't know if Logitech... Yeah. I would assume Logitech has some sort of patent on free-scrolling wheels. It wouldn't surprise me. Not.
Well, that's so contrary to everything we believe in. It's, how can a wheel that rolls be patented?
That reminds me. I think it was you that posted. It was probably a while ago. There was a screenshot from like an Apple conference where they said like we have 4,000 patents, and I think you had. I'm pretty sure it was you that said this was like anti to everything that we aim to do. It was either you or one of the engineers that said this.
Yeah. That was I do recall that. And yeah, it's just the antithesis. It's of everything that we believe, and not because we don't think companies should be able to make money.
Sure.
We just think the idea the very idea that ideas come out of nowhere is nonsense. Anything was built on everything that came before it, and that's one of the fortunate benefits that we have is what progress is. Newton's apple hitting his head. This isn't the reality, and so I don't think an idea can be owned if everything that made its foundation was free.
Mm-hmm. I think that sort of ties us into sustainability and repairability as well, then, because a lot of companies are very, very touchy about their devices being open, very touchy about things being repaired. And this is getting more and more so, especially in the mobile market. You know, you've got Apple putting, hard locking their devices to parts to serial numbers. So if you replace something, even if it's from an official device, I believe this was a couple of years ago, someone took a battery it was either Apple or Samsung, they took a battery from one device, moved it into another device, or it was the screen, one of the two. And even though they were both official devices, it was official parts, the device just didn't work. It just would not function. And that, like, you think of what we can do on the desktop, right? You can take out anything you want. We've got very much, like, obviously it's hard to repair the individual parts, but they're very complex. So I will at least accept being able to take a part out and replace the entire part. But that just doesn't really exist in the mobile space or the laptop space for the most part at this point. And it, especially with companies talking about this idea about we want to be sustainable, we want to like be helpful to the environment, it's this weird disconnect where they don't want to let up and make it so it's easy to get access to this, but also they're going to talk about how it's such an important ideal.
Yeah, it is a strange dichotomy between the talk about and how it's practiced when it comes to the products. It's hard to be too speculative about some of the reasons. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that most of them aren't good. Like, why can't you take a battery from one device to another? In an Apple device, are there true security reasons that the Touch ID needs to be attached to that particular device? I mean, maybe there is. If I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt,
sure.
That doesn't excuse it. And then sometimes it's market demands too that are saying we want thinner and thinner things, and so we use more and more adhesive. That makes repairability harder. Is there more creative engineering we can do to avoid that, so these devices can last longer or be repaired, and so individuals can repair them? Our belief is that it's your device. I think there's very, very little risk for a computer manufacturer to just allow you to open up and do whatever you want with it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you can open it up and put a screwdriver through the screen and say, hey, I got a warranty request here. My screen is busted. So that's why it's not, it's not a risk to us to just enable people to repair their own devices and make components available to them to do so. Mm-hmm. And I know I've seen really thin designs that don't require adhesive. And so I know there's a lot going on there, but I agree. It shouldn't be intentionally blocked. Mm-hmm. One of the excuses that's often used is that that these devices are too complex for people to repair themselves. I think that's one of the most absurd reasons for this. I testified once for Right to Repair in Colorado, mm-hmm. and that was what John Deere had said when there. There were two people that were against this: John Deere and a wheelchair manufacturer.
Okay. Wheelchair one.
They have some crazy monopoly over wheelchairs, electric right. wheelchairs. It's bizarre. I don't know if it's just a U.S. thing, but and so repairability was something that they were fighting against. Mm-hmm. But their main argument was that these things were too complex. And to my mind, to the person that had a horse and then got a Model T, that was complex. But we figured it out because we had the ability to do it. These things are, whenever your policy depends on not having faith in people, it's the wrong policy.
Well, I think even if the argument is it's too complex for an individual, I don't know how to repair my car. I know little about my car, but I can go to someone who does know how to do it. I can pay someone who has access to those parts, just like I could if I wanted to, but I am outsourcing that work to another person who does have the expertise. Even in the case of a phone, let's say I don't have the equipment to safely repair a phone, but there are people that do. They have, all of the microscopes and clean rooms and all that stuff. If the parts are available for me, they're also available for that person as well, who can also do that work. And I don't really see that as an excuse that makes sense.
And if you wanted to learn how to do it, you absolutely can. Mm. And if you make a mistake and bust your thing doing it, well, you learn something along the way too.
Yeah.
It was broken to start with. Why not give people the freedom to tinker with their own things?
Mm-hmm. So I guess we should start getting close to wrapping up, but what is so you've got a bunch of device classes that are available now. You've got laptops, desktops, you've got these mini things, you've got server stuff. What is the most popular device class that you guys sell?
Laptops.
Laptops. Okay. That makes sense. I'm not a laptop guy myself. I tend to just work from home, but I know a lot of people, they have a device they take home. They like going places when they work. It makes sense. Or, if they're a student or something and want that. Like that, I get why people use laptops. It's just not for me. And it's good that you guys have this range of devices. You have these, these portable devices. You have these, graphical intensive devices. Like there's an option there that makes sense for most use cases that I could see.
Yeah, the Linux, people that use Linux are very broad spectrum, mm-hmm. and they need a lot of different, and they have a lot of different needs. And
Oh, we lost him. why did we lose him? What happened? Give me a second. We'll cut back to this. I'm just going to finish it like this. There was a couple of minutes left anyway. People just get to see this.
There we go.
It's gone. Okay, he left. Okay, we're good. Okay, Brody's gone now. It's just me and Brody. Oh, it's just me and Carl. No other Brody here. Anyway, you were saying about devices, cases, Linux.
Just the Linux, folks that use Linux are just across the entire spectrum. Mm-hmm. From the ultra-portable devices to the most powerful laptops that exist. And mm-hmm. The variety of the needs is really broad, and so we do our best to try to cover the bases for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I guess unless there's anything else you want to touch on, we can start wrapping it up there.
Yeah, sounds great. I think we covered a lot of fun stuff.
Awesome. If somebody wants to go buy a System 76 device, direct them to the place.
System76.com, mm-hmm. and everything is right there. Mm-hmm. We appreciate everyone's support. I think Linux is an open source itself is such an incredible ecosystem where mm-hmm. all the innovation is really happening. And if you like the stuff we're doing, then the best way to help support us is to grab a laptop or desktop from us. But otherwise, I hope you like the software we make and like Pop! OS and get some good use out of it.
Sweet. I know you got a lot of devices, but pick a device to make a recommendation for.
I could do two.
Okay.
For a laptop. Mm-hmm. That's kind of tough. This is like choosing my favorite child. I don't feel uncomfortable doing that. Like I said, I really like open firmware, and so and I use the Darter, so I think the Darter is a great device for if you go for a laptop. It's right mm-hmm. in between, like it's nice and portable, powerful, and of course the open firmware. On the desktop, it's probably Thaleo Mira. Mm-hmm. It's the most versatile, and doesn't take much desk space, and it's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. The case looked really nice, honestly. Like, it's a super cool looking case.
Yeah. I have the 5 or 6 accents that we offer mm-hmm. here, and I change them out all the time. it's just fun to change the look of it. It's easy to do, and so it's nice. Mm-hmm.
Is there anywhere else you want to direct people to? Do you want to send people over to your socials, or not really?
Sure. Yeah. If you do want to follow me on Twitter, it's just at Carl Rochelle, and happy to always have conversations with folks interested in Linux.
Mm-hmm. I did see a couple. I every time I have someone on, I scroll through their feed. And always go back like months and months and months and months. I'll see if I can find the post in particular. I think it was last year. Because I saw that. You reposted when a friend of mine bought a System 76 device. Where is the post she made? I'm not going to find it now. It's way too far ago. Come on. Surely I can find it. Where? There she is. Okay. This one. I scrolled through the list and I saw that. I was like, oh.
That's fantastic.
So on that note, I guess let's end it off. If you like this, you want to see the audio version, you can find the video version on YouTube at Tech Over Tea. If you're watching the video, you can find the audio basically anywhere. Check out your favorite podcast app. There is an RSS feed as well. Chuck it in your favorite app. I like AntennaPod. It's pretty nice. If you want to see my other stuff, my main channel is Brody Robertson. I do Linux videos there 6-ish days a week. Probably, maybe starting more drama. We'll see about that. Hopefully not. Depends how I feel that day. And I've got my gaming channel, Brody on Games. I do gaming stuff there. There are clips that come out. I don't know what we're playing. Probably more The World Ends With You and probably some Neptunia. I don't know. Check it out. I'll give you the final word. What do you want to say?
Oh, just thanks for having me. It's always awesome.
Absolute pleasure. I'm more than happy to do this again anytime.
Cool.
Maybe after the new laptop comes out. That'll be cool. That'll be pretty cool. Well, I'll catch you later.
All right.
See you guys.